The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
We're journeying back to the 1800s today and reading Journeys, Tamils in Singapore, 1800 to present. Joining me is author of a book that not only looks back in history so we can understand how the Tamil community not only prospered but grew as Singapore grew and contributed to Singapore, but it is also a book that, by the way, commissioned by Tamil Murusu, looks at the very real contemporary problems still facing the community, even as it lauds the luminaries within the community. So I'm very pleased to welcome Nirmala Murugayan. She is the author of the book that we're featuring today, Journeys, Tamils in Singapore. She was editor of Tamil Murusu from 2005 to 2011. She also wrote a 2014 book you may have come across, Old War, New Methods, The Fight Against Terror. She was senior political correspondent for The Straits Times. And she joins us now to talk about the book that was 8 years in the making, Nirmala. Congratulations. Now, this is such a detailed book that looks at so many different aspects, the political, social lives of Tamils in Singapore. And even though they were a very small community, there's much difference within the community itself, given the different origins of the Tamils that did make their way here to Singapore in the 19th century. So let's go back to the start. When Raffles landed in Singapore in 1819, when and why did the Tamils make their way here? It was in your book, you talk about the spice trade.
Mm-hmm. The spice wars. Mm-hmm. Hi, Michelle. Thank you for having me. And it started all because of this big, huge wars that were fought over spices, nutmeg in particular, cinnamon. And it was found in large quantities in remote areas in Indonesia. And so there was a huge battle for these spices. More expensive than gold in those days, between the Dutch, the English, and it was who gets to the spices first. And it was a long journey which the English, under the East India Company, started out in the 1600s, actually. The book does go way back into the 1600s. And how they were defeated in Indonesia, in the islands, the Spice Islands. And they started looking elsewhere and set their sights on India. And the base of the East India Company, according to many records, was first founded in Madras, in Tamil Nadu. And the English and the Tamils liked each other, got along very well. So the trust was there. So when Raffles set off and he founded Singapore together with William Farquhar, the Tamils followed.
Mm. And what were their roles when these early Tamil settlers?
Mm. A large majority were the what we today would call the daily rated employees, the coolies, the people who worked on the roads and the railroads and did a lot of menial, laborious work, which paid very little. And there was this huge, I think in those days, they did not call it the slave trade, but it was slavery. Camouflaged in a way that people thought they would be coming to Singapore to earn good wages and work in a beautiful garden city. But the reality turned out to be very different. They were very poorly managed, very poorly treated. A lot of them died. And basically, deceit was the name of the game then. Then you had above this large group of coolies and manual workers and laborers would be the slightly better educated people who knew English. And a lot of them came from Sri Lanka, a place in the north known as Jaffna. And they became the school teachers, the railroad masters, the general post officer, and engineers, and were very, very useful to the English in the early days to build the infrastructure, much of which you see today. The roads, even the Istana was built by convicts who came from Tamil Nadu. Yeah, basically, I think they just got along very well with each other. And so the Tamils stayed and they grew with Singapore.
Yes. And can you share with us a little about the contribution of the Tamil community? It's always been seen as a minority, along with the Eurasians, who have never reached, I think, 3.5% of the, of their segment of the population. They've always been seen, the Tamils, as a group that's punched above their weight when it comes to contributions. So what would you see as significant milestones of the community's contribution to Singapore's growth?
I think from the very early days, it was quite obvious that the English trusted and relied on the Tamils. The first few police officers were from Tamil Nadu. There was a large number of engineers who came from Sri Lanka. They helped to build the huge roads and the railway lines and the building and infrastructure. Being an easy group to manage, the English brought more and more of them into Singapore. And among them would be, even in the very early years, pioneers in business, in education, even in politics. They made a huge contribution to the community, which I think very early on had decided that their lot and their fate was in Singapore. I think we have in the early days one gentleman called Vayalu Pakrisamy, and there is one account where he owned a lot of property. And Dr. Goh Keng Swee, our former Deputy Prime Minister and the Finance Minister, rented one of his houses. And there were businessmen who owned carriages and hobnobbed with the English and went for their high teas and so on. So from very early already, they were making a huge contribution. And then if you look at the modern day period, modern day as in post-50s, mm-hmm. when the PAP came to power, you would have the former president, S.R. Nathan. He rose from being a school dropout to starting out education or the formal education very late in life, rising all the way up to become the president of Singapore. And then you have deputy prime ministers, Professor S. Jayakumar, and then our first foreign minister, Mr. S. Rajaratnam. And then later on, you had Mr. S. Dhanabalan, National Development Minister. And in today's cabinet, you see quite a number of Tamil Indian ministers, Mr. Tharman Shanmugaratnam, Mr. K. Shanmugam, Ms. Indrani Raja, who became the first Tamil cabinet minister. And then in the world of business and the big corporations, Mr. J.Y. Pillay, he came from Sri Lanka. You would have educators. You just have to throw a stone and I think you'll hit 10 people who would be of Tamil origin. The High Court judges, so many of them came from Jaffna in Sri Lanka.
Yes.
There was a joke that it was Colombo Court in Singapore. Ah. And Colombo being the capital of Sri Lanka.
Okay. Yep. We're reading Journeys by Nirmala Murugayan. It's a book commissioned by Tamil Murasu. And it takes us on a journey, a historical journey, of the development of the Tamil community in Singapore from 1600s, really, to the present time. Nirmala, you mentioned S.R. Nathan, the late Mr. S.R. Nathan. And in this book, you talk about his insightful editorial guidance. I mm-hmm. wonder if you can share mm-hmm. a little bit about his hand in the making of the book.
That's a very interesting story because it was partly because of him that the book took 8 years to get to see it printed, because he knew a lot about the way the community grew, and he was able to add a lot of depth, and he extended the research to just beyond what was very superficial on the surface, to really try and understand how the Tamils arrived in Singapore. So he kept editing and re-editing and throwing out drafts very ruthlessly, but because he knew that we were not getting it right, and so that led us to really look for the very difficult pieces of information that just was impossible to find, because it so much of it was in the old records kept by the East India Company, and a lot of this material was destroyed when the Japanese occupation took place. The British officers, or the English officers, no, by that time it was the British officers, who burnt all the documents that linked them to Britain. And very valuable documents were used to wrap up goreng pisang and street food. And so we lost, I think, a lot of the official records and data. And the Tamils somehow, unlike the Chinese, didn't seem to have this keen sense and interest in keeping records of family history. We found it very difficult to find the first Tamil who even arrived in Singapore. Many people say it's Pillai, who came with Raffles. Well, the Tamils say he's Tamil, the Malayalis say he's Malayali, so the book says he could be Tamil, he could be Malayali.
Wow.
Because the Pillai name is common in both communities. And then it was some academic, very early academic work done by authors who studied a lot of the Tamils in Malaya. And in those very early days, not much distinction between Singapore and Malaya. So the rubber tappers, the misery, their life, the recruitment methods, all were gleaned from many different sources. And we had to be absolutely sure it was accurate, it was reliable, and it was relevant to the story, which really captures the struggles this community has faced, and I think even today continues to face.
Let's talk about some of those struggles. Yeah. Language, for example, within the community, and keeping that alive, is that an issue?
I think for all communities it is. It gives you a sense of identity, belonging. Your mother tongue leads you to your roots, your culture, who you are. And the Tamils, being a minority community, I think they felt it along the way. They were very, very fortunate, and still are very fortunate, to be in a country that is governed by a political group of leaders who believe in meritocracy and have enshrined Tamil as one of the four official languages. I think nowhere in the world is this seen more evident than it is in Singapore.
Lack of educational attainment.
Lack of educational attainment
raises.
Yeah. This has always been, you see, the way the community slowly evolved. If you had a large number of laborers, coolies, manual workers coming in, their children needed English to make it in society, and which was what the better educated Tamils had. And therefore, if you look at the social strata, the top of the pyramid would be made of people who really knew English. And that was the big advantage for the Jaffna Tamils. They had a bilingual education. But over time, I think the Tamil language schools, just like the Chinese language schools and the Malay language schools, started to close down. So then it became a problem. Nobody quite understands why Tamils have, or Indians have, a problem with mathematics, or they're struggling in school. It could be a lot on to do with social values of education. Has this community moved fast enough in a very fast-paced society? Are we still clinging to Tamil Nadu as a place you kind of look down on because you think you are many rungs up in Singapore? But the way the state is developing, that is not quite true at all. You go there as a tourist and you'll get stumped at the rate of development and the pace of development in Tamil Nadu. So is this a community that has come to grips with the realities, the challenges of making it in a multiracial, a global society? And therefore, the Indian community was the first to identify this educational underachievement problem. And the leaders, Mr. Dhanabalan, Mr. S. Chandradas, there were so many of them, President Nathan himself, felt that a community approach was needed, and a nationwide an umbrella approach, and not done by little organizations and societies. And therefore, SINDA was formed. SINDA has brought the community a long way, but the challenges keep evolving. You know, the other communities also are in this race. And now you have this big global citizens amidst you. They are in your neighborhood schools. They are in the HDB estates, and they are hungry and they are lean, and they somehow resemble a bit of the early immigrants who are fighters and
came for opportunity.
Whereas I don't know if the younger generations of Singaporeans, the Tamils, have become a little bit more, a little bit too comfortable, and taken things for granted. But I think the wake-up calls and the signs are there, that if you can't do well in mathematics and science, then you're going to run into a lot of trouble later on in your educational career path.
Well, it's a book that raises a lot of questions, tremendous amount of scholarship that went into 8 years of the making, and I think it should be required reading in most schools. Thank you so much for being here, Nirmala.
Thank you, Michelle.
Nirmala Murugayan is the author of Journeys, Tamils in Singapore, 1800 to Present, the book in our spotlight today.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.